You're listening to TheStreet.com's Real Story with Frank Curzio. Visit anytime for this and our other multimedia products.
I'm Frank Curzio, and this is The Real Story, where I go beyond the headlines and let you know what's really moving this market. Today's Wednesday, and after being in the green for most of the day, stocks sold off sharply. Most of the weakness came after FOMC released their minutes in which they downgraded their economic forecast, including its outlook for unemployment. Now, the Dow fell 50 points, 0.6%. Might not seem like a lot, but it was up over 100 points today. The Nasdaq S&P fell 0.5%. The Russell was down 0.8%. That was up over 2% today, so you see the major reversal. Now, a lot of news came out. Several large caps reported, Hewlett-Packard, Deere, Target, BJ's Wholesale. As I just mentioned, the FOMC minutes, oil surging past 60, and Bank of America raising $13.5 billion. Now, I have two great guests that are going to break down all the fun from today. The first, Andrew Horowitz from The Disciplined Investor. Never shies away from talking about any issue. And then Stephanie Link, Director of Research for the Action Alerts Plus portfolio, who owns Hewlett-Packard, fell a little bit today in the quarter. She's going to tell you if the pullback is a buying opportunity. Also, both of them are going to give you their favorite stocks to buy and to short. Two great interviews. Looking at sectors, strong oil, gold, alternative energy, weak financials. Big reversal there as well, home builders and retailers. Getting some individual stocks, Paragon Shipping up 22%. Target was up 3%. Both those companies reported solid earnings. Epic Systems up 8% on two upgrades. Looking at losers, Hewlett-Packard fell 5%. Ann Taylor down 10%, both of those on weak earnings. And Palm was down 9% on a downgrade to sell. Remember, that stock came from a dollar, and the downgrade came at 11. Turning to tech, RIM and Google were flat. Apple was down 2%. And started yesterday, which I mentioned, we're relaunching a special offer for real money for those who did not get in. This is your final chance to get in at a very big discount. I mentioned yesterday, three names we just signed, Ron Insania, Peter Schiff, John Nigerian, have just become contributors on top of everyone that's available on the site now. RevShark, Kramer, Crescenzi, Meisler, Fitzpatrick, Farley, keep writing these names down, Morrison, Cass. Again, you think about it, go to the, I'm going to give you the website, not right now, but I'll give it to you during the podcast. And to get that, you have to listen. How's it going out there? Pretty busy day. Another fight between the bulls and the bears. Dow is up more than 100 and sold off pretty hard. You could blame the FOMC minutes. Also, some big shots reporting earnings today and also last night, which was Hewlett-Packard, Deere, BJ's, Target. B of A raised $13.5 billion at roughly $10.70. The stock actually held up pretty well. Even after today's sell-off, where a lot of financials reversed, it was up 1% to about 11.44. Plus, you see the move in oil breaking out past 60 on positive news, which I'm going to break down later on. But first, let's get into my interview, and that is with my buddy Andrew Horowitz from The Disciplined Investor. Before we're going to get into all the details, what I just mentioned, I start by asking him, what do you think about all these offerings going through?
That's a great question, Frank. I mean, we're talking lots of shares in the millions. You know, traditionally, what would happen is that we would get emails, we would get notifications, faxes of a secondary, and you have a couple of days to figure out, do you want to do it? And then usually on secondaries, you usually say no. But, you know, you got to play the game. A lot of times, you know, if you want the IPOs, you got to take a piece of the secondaries. These things are happening so quickly, it's like a secondary in a box.
Oh,
you know, it's unbelievable.
Bank of America raising $13.5 billion. It seems like they could have raised over $25 billion at 10 and change. And coincidentally, nice upgrade by Goldman like 3 days ago, right? Really pushing that stock nice and high, nice and ripe.
I think it was a coincidence, Frank. I don't think it had anything to do one had anything to the other.
it is crazy how that buy came out perfectly. I mean, how much more cash was Bank of America able to raise off of that upgrade? I mean, there's no denying that.
Let's do a little role play here. I'm going to show you how this works, okay? You ready? Frank, you know, my favorite podcast, you won't believe it, is yours. I wouldn't listen to anything else. Your podcast is the best. Whose is your favorite podcast?
Yours.
See, you know what I'm saying? That's it. Bank of America from Goldman. What's good for one is good for the others, and it's a big game. We saw this deal come out. They priced it under. There was some confusion whether Bank of America was at 10 or 1077. Did you see that? At first it was 10, and then it was 1077.
Yep.
The stock dipped down. And you know, the buy of a lifetime. Let's get as many as we can. You know, people saying I wanted millions. They gave me 25,000. I got to tell you something. I don't know where these are going, and I would ask the listeners out there to question if they've heard from anybody saying, "Hey, do you want to buy these secondaries?" I think these are happening all at the institutional level.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for the most part, I should say.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything on my end either. I'm sure it's all institution.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything. So, I mean, you know, the question is, if I was possibly staying away from Bank of America, before the secondary, why am I going to buy the secondary?
Yeah.
And by the way, folks, a secondary isn't like a present. It's not. It's dilution. Here's my theory. Tell me what you think about this. In the days when earnings were good, we had good earnings, one of the things that companies did all the time, I don't think we talked about this, you and I, but mm-hmm. one of the things that companies did was share buybacks. They would take back shares, thus enhancing their earnings per share because there's less shares out there for the earnings to be a part of, right? The second thing they did oftentimes was then pay a dividend. They did that because essentially by paying the dividend, they were able to pretty much do the secondary or the buyback for free because now they're going to pay themselves on shares that they own in the Treasury, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, now, we have the reverse going on right now. They're cutting dividends, many of the companies, and they're doing secondaries. Now, if the first thing we talked about was a way for them to boost EPS without doing anything, and I've talked to Standard & Poor's several times, asked them to put out an adjusted EPS for buybacks. Don't you think that would be a good idea?
Yep.
But they won't do it. Okay? We know why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it sweetens the deal. So now with companies that have losses, is it a potential that what they want to do is they want to put out more shares to spread the loss and make it look better? I don't know.
I don't know either.
But they're doing everything that they can right now to bring down the losses, to cut their expenses, not only the banks, everybody, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing an unbelievable job of it. I mean, they're going and slashing the first and the most successful way of slashing expenses is just get rid of payroll. You know, the benefit package, et cetera, is just amazing. So that's number one. The second thing is, don't spend. That's why inventories are not building, right? They're not getting supply. They're selling everything on the shelf and the shelf if possible.
Hmm.
And now this way, they're bringing in money on the secondaries. I think it's fascinating. There's almost no reason. There's no reason to do the public-private toxic debt buy now because essentially it was just done with all these secondaries.
You know, I don't know if that is going to get done anyway. They're going to sweeten up the terms so much for a company like BlackRock and PIMCO, but I really can't see why anybody wants to go to business with the government anyway. Why? They change the rules every single week. I mean, they're trying to regulate people who did not take TARP. They're trying to regulate their pay scale who did not take TARP. I mean, that's insane.
I wrote a piece, and it was entitled something like, Barney Frank wants to regulate your pay. I got to tell you something. People were not happy. I mean, the comments that came off of that, it really infuriated people that there was, what happened to that separation? On one hand, I do understand a company that says, okay, I need help. And then the government says, okay, here's your help. But you know what? There's strings attached because we want to make sure, number one, the taxpayers don't get burned. And number two, we want to make sure you do a good job and revive the company. We don't want to put money just down a black hole.
Mm-hmm.
So I could kind of go with that a little bit. I could understand that. But at the same time, then we have that very, very weird situation come out where Paulson basically made every one of those banks take the money whether they liked it or not,
mm-hmm.
supposedly.
Yep.
That whole strong-arming thing, I don't know if you looked at that. That was terrible.
That was terrible. And I think that's why you're seeing comments from Jamie Dimon saying, listen, we want nothing to do with the government. And you're seeing that because these are some of the companies that have done well. They've done okay. I mean, even Morgan Stanley, you could maybe put in there the Goldman Sachs or whatever, however you feel about Goldman Sachs.
Sure.
But, it's amazing because they don't want to have anything to do with the government. They're just like, we want to pay back TARP yesterday, so let's do it. And now what? We're putting that date off to what? Like the first week in June, which probably means by mid-June, they won't be able to pay it off for another 2-3 months.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting why they're not allowing them to pay it back. The only thing that comes to mind is because they don't want to, show their cards on who really possibly still needs it. And obviously, until each of those companies do the secondaries, if they're going to do a secondary, and they can keep the market up until that point, there won't be any run on the banks and anybody looking at the companies and saying, hey, wait a second. But you know what's really fascinating, Frank? We're talking about 6 months' time or so that the TARP was, about 6 months ago they got the TARP?
Yeah.
Do you realize how much money they've had to make in profits to pay that back so quickly?
Yeah.
And don't you think it's time?
Also raising money, though. Also raising money.
Also raising money, yes, clearly. But, you know, it seems to me that the banks are making such an incredible amount of money.
Well, look at the yield curve. You could drive a truck through it.
Right.
I mean, how great is it? It's awesome for them, you know. And the FOMC meeting, they just came out of it, right? We're doing this about 2:45. They just came out and said, listen, you know what? Don't worry, guys. Interest rates are staying low. You have nothing to worry about. And the market rose on that.
And what's interesting also about that, I was just reading it, actually all 17 pages of this, but the baseline commentary was now they've extended their concerns, which is not usually the case. They don't really come out with too many pessimistic discussions in those meetings, unless it's something serious. They come out with a discussion saying, you know what, we think it's going to last a little bit longer.
Yeah.
We think that, you know, this recession is going to be extended. We believe now that we're going to have to increase our unemployment level assumptions, okay, over that time. And it was a rather, I would say, you know, I don't want to say gloomy, but it was not a positive meeting.
It was pretty gloomy. 9.6% they came out with unemployment that they see in the high end, 9.2 to 9.6% this year, 2009.
Right, which again, they've been low to begin with, and they've been a little bit too optimistic, everybody thought, at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's interesting about that is the total disconnect between the economy, the Fed, earnings, to a lesser degree, and the stock markets. I mean, the stock markets didn't flinch with that news.
Mm.
And, you know, that's fine. I mean, there's a lot of optimism out there. You know, the positive information is clearly positive. The negative information is positive,
If you look at it, what's actually, seriously now I'm going to ask you, what could push these markets low? We're expecting double digit, all right? 9.6% means double digit, okay? We're expecting double digits on unemployment. The economy looks terrible. The banks, okay, fine, they're making profits, but you know that there's a certain amount of banks that you still can't short, which is amazing to me, including Ford and General Motors, I believe, now, too. And you saw General Motors go from $1 to $1.40 on nothing. But what could actually push these markets lower? Because it seems like whenever they go lower, don't worry about it, the government's right there for us. I mean, pretty soon, you know, if we go lower, much lower, you know, the uptick rule is going to be pushed to the front.
Right.
So, you know, it almost makes sense that, okay, what is going to push us lower? Plus, you know, we went over the trillions on the sidelines and the managers want to get back in. I mean, who's actually selling stock here?
Yeah, it's a good question. The same question is who's buying stock. Volume has been drying up. I know that's not the indicator, but I got to tell you something. First of all, stock markets do not go up forever unchecked. I mean, it's just the way it is. Earnings right now have still been coming out looking more positive than the analysts predicted, but only by about 8 or 9 or 10%, okay?
It's all cost-cutting, though. Even Target. Target's report is terrible. Their revenues are horrible. They're obviously losing market share, but they killed them on the bottom line. That's all everybody wants to focus on.
Here's the game. Everybody knows this information, Frank. We all know that they're beating on earnings because of cost-cutting, massive cost-cutting, by the way, okay? And they're coming down almost, it's almost across the board, they're coming down on revenues. After a while, there is a point where you can't cut any more employees. You won't have anybody selling things and ringing up the cash registers, right?
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, if you continue with these massive sales, and again, whether it's retail or any other industry, these massive sales, rebates or reductions, okay? Everybody knows what's going on, but everybody's still saying, just like this happened before, okay, so what? The market's going up. What the heck? Let's put money in anyway. Ignore the fundamentals. What happens is eventually, everybody's going to say if the time comes that the market actually starts moving down, okay, it moves down, fine. Like last week, it was up down 5%, and then miraculously, it came back up like 3.5% or 3% already.
Mm-hmm.
When that starts to move down and it's unchecked, and everybody says, you know what? Okay, hold on. I know that the markets are supposed to be lower from here, if that's their theory. I know that they should be taking a breather and going down from here. Okay. there's going to be kind of a commonality with everybody realizing, okay, that is the right thing. I can no longer ignore that information. And if next quarter or in between these quarters, we don't see a lot of really good news, the economics that are coming out have been, you know, better than the worst case scenario. But I got to tell you something, we're starting to creep into a few numbers that don't look so good. Mm-hmm. The housing numbers that came out this week, the retail sales that came out.
But that's a positive, isn't it? Because we're working off inventory. I mean, that's what everybody's telling me. I actually had somebody say to me, say, listen, you know, we have to work off inventory. But it just we're being told that the economy is coming back. It looks great. The number wasn't positive. It's not a positive number. I mean, if it's just to prove the point, the bulls are actually pointing to the increase in single home sales to say why, well, at least that part was bullish. So the fact that whole index really came down so much, or the housing starts came down so much, it's not good news. It tells you the economy's horrible right now. I mean, it's much, much worse than I think, than everyone's really going on TV and telling us, including the Fed and everybody else.
I tend to agree with you, and I got to tell you something. Every day we have another moment of, how is that possible in our office? It's like the game show.
Mm-hmm.
How is that possible? And what's interesting is, you know, when you take the other side of this discussion, you take a stock market that it moves down dramatically, okay, and there's all sorts of news and people are ignoring it all and it moves down. You know what happens? The government steps in. They put stops on things. They're going to stop short selling. They're going to do this. Meanwhile, they let it just go up out of control beyond any kind of recognition, which is fine. Let the market go up. I'm good with it. I'm fine. Let it go up, okay? But my concern is, the irrational exuberance that seems to be exhibited right now, I call it three things. We see green shoots, we see green ooze, and green envy. Green shoots, we know what that is. You know, a little couple of things look a little better here and there, whatever, right? We see the green ooze. That's kind of like the real numbers that are coming out underneath things, the real homes numbers, the real CPI numbers, you know, the real. And then we got the green envy, and that's the thing right now, that one in particular, which is popping the markets, which is, oh my, I want to get in rich, get in fast too. I want to make money. Mm-hmm. And driving up stocks that shouldn't be driven up. I mean, look at some of the stocks like a Caterpillar, okay? Caterpillar's earnings were atrocious. Do you remember?
You want to see something worse than that?
What?
Look at Deere's earnings from today.
Atrocious.
And the stock's horrendous. Up. And the stock's up. I mean, they. Right. I looked at it like three or four times. I'm like, the guidance was horrible. The margins were horrible. They said things are going to get worse. There was nothing positive in the quarter. I guess everybody did, like, you know, the hack job on the stock, and expectations was so, so low to the point where people were like, okay, just whatever, no matter what, as long as the CEO and the CFO didn't kill themselves, as long as that didn't happen, the stock was going to go higher. So I understand that. But when you read between the lines and you're looking at the quarter, it's kind of frustrating from a research person. And it's kind of coming off that we're both, like, very, very bearish. I'm not bearish, just some of the stocks that I see, that it would be nice when you do the fundamentals, you do the homework, and even the technical analysis, and you're saying, okay, well, I think this stock's going to be here, and then, you know, your thesis is working out, and the government comes in and changes the rules. I mean, how frustrating is that? I mean, how many people lost money on the financials when they're like, okay, wow, these toxic assets are out of control. Look at their leverage to construction. I mean, it is horrible. I mean, the credit card exposure is horrible. And then the Fed comes in and says, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We're going to keep interest rates low. You guys are going to make plenty of money. No worries. We're going to go out and tell everybody everything's good. This way you guys can raise money. And it's kind of frustrating from a research analyst perspective, you know?
You can't do research. Seriously.
Yeah.
You know, if you were to do research right now, we bought Mosaic about 5 weeks ago.
Great call.
Saw the earnings come out, they looked horrible.
Great call, you said on this podcast as well.
Yeah. I got to tell you something. I'm thrilled that we're up $20 a share. I'm horrified the reason why I bought it. Okay? It made no sense. But you know what? We said, you know what? We'll buy into it.
Mm-hmm.
If it comes away from us, you know what? How much do we get hurt? We'll take it out. No mm-hmm. big deal. But generally speaking, it's pretty low, it's pretty ugly, and the way that things are going these days, you know, sometimes you got to say, all right, you know what, I'm going to kind of go along with the crowd a little bit. The problem is you need to be prepared when the crowd goes the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be ahead of it. The other thing I want to discuss, I don't know if we talked about this. Did we talk about, the leaks that came out, right?
No, we're going to do that right now. 1 second.
Let me
introduce you here. I want to make sure everyone knows who I'm talking to. Andrew Horowitz, my buddy from Disciplined Investor. You guys got a chance. He has a podcast as well. Go and listen to it. And leading to my next segment, go ahead.
By the way, Dennis Gartman's on this week.
And yeah, that's a great guest. Good job.
Yeah, he's interesting discussion about metals. I'm sorry, continue.
No. And you're leading right to my next question, which is, what happened with Hewlett Packard yesterday? This is a great, I didn't know this, but go ahead.
Well, Hewlett Packard, here's something fascinating, you know, because all of a sudden, I don't know if you noticed yesterday, about 3-ish, 315, 320, 330, all of a sudden the market rolled over, right?
Yeah.
And that happens. Okay, that happens. But I'm wondering, what happened there? And I happen to have been scanning through some news, and I notice, there's a couple different news sites that I use, and Bloomberg and all that, but I see on one of the aggregators a hit, 322, 3 p.m., 322 in the afternoon, Hewlett-Packard misses forecast, revenues down, printer sales off, blah, blah, blah. Now, I didn't notice till afterwards, by the way. I didn't see this till afterwards.
And also, for the audience out there, keep in mind, they came out with their report after the close.
After the close. Okay, and I'm looking at this, I'm saying, wait, how come that's timestamp 322? That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So I'm looking at it again, sure, I read the report, sure enough, it's the report. Now, the report on the top said to be released at 4 whatever time it was, 4 something.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you, I tracked it back. I'm going to put that, if anybody wants to look at it, I'm going to put that on my blog, thedisciplinedinvestor.com. I will put a post up right now. I will show you the exact, I snapshot of the timestamp from the aggregator. And I'm going to show you exactly how the market rolled over at exactly 322.
Now, did Hewlett-Packard come down in that time frame as well?
I got to look at Hewlett-Packard. It came off a bit, but...
Because I know then it fell 5% after hours, especially after the conference call.
Yeah, you know, Hewlett-Packard came off about 60 cents at that, or 70 cents at that point.
Mm.
But I thought that was kind of fascinating, and that happens from time to time. But I got to tell you something. There's some very odd things that are happening in these markets. Yes. I am not suggesting that that was done purposely. Probably was a mistake.
It was a mistake, but I could tell you, honestly, and even in Stocks Under 10 area, you have to see some of the movements in stocks right before they report. I mean, they will go up 15% and then then blow out the numbers and then go up like another 5 or 7%. I mean, right before the quarter on no news. It's unbelievable.
Right.
Unbelievable that the information that is being leaked beforehand. And hopefully SEC is honest, but absolutely, you're seeing that. I'm seeing it a ton. I'm like, okay, let me wait till after the quarter. Not only that, I'm seeing firms upgrade 3 days before the quarter. How do you update? How do you upgrade a stock?
Ooh, nobody wants to get ahead of the
No
the news,
way.
Right?
You got
to
be out of your mind, especially with a stock of 15% heading in. They're like, no, they're definitely going to beat the results. And they blow out the results like 3 days later when it's supposed to be in a quiet period. I'm like, you're risking your reputation because that company comes out with terrible numbers, and you just told your clients to buy 3 days on a hunch. You will lose your job. So
Let's get something straight here. You said something very important, that you hope that when you see these leaks, the SEC is on it, right?
Yeah.
Now, leaks are illegal. You're not allowed to leak public information out to, you know, be prior to the regular release. Well, even if it's a broad-based thing, you're not allowed to leak information out that's private, right?
Unless it's a stress test.
Exactly. Now, here's the point. I'm not even kidding about this. I'm not trying to, you know, stand on my, you know, holier than thou, looking down at everybody, let them eat cake. You know what they did, whoever they were, and whoever whatever happened there, because that was a planned leak to test the market, how they felt about everything that was going on. Allowing that to happen, doing the things that Paulson did, and if you sum up all the things, the Machiavellian approach that they're taking to this market right here.
What about Ken Lewis? Don't forget that. I mean, I'm sure he said, listen, we're not doing Merrill. And they told him, no way, you're doing Merrill.
Right. And the Bear Stearns situation. I mean, you could just add all this up, okay? And the truth of the matter is that, it's, like I said, very Machiavellian. When the ends justify the means, of course. If the market seems to go up, oh, okay, that's okay. We see, you know... again, I'm all for being bullish. I don't care. Bearish, bullish, just make money. That's good with me. That's how we operate, okay? But if you see the government leaking data, if you see them doing things in what would be considered, you know, I don't want to say illegal maybe, but not above board, why can't companies do that?
Yeah, that's true. And not every company.
The moral hazard here is humongous.
And, I just want to make clear, not every company, but it's amazing some of the companies that I see it. And company that I actually have on my watch list for my Stocks Under 10 newsletter, when you want to do the smart thing and say, you know what, I want to wait till after the quarter because we're dealing with one of the worst conditions in 70 years.
Right.
So I want to see how management's dealing with them. You get an up-to-date, real-time report on everything in the conference call, and then you can say, all right, you know what, they're ahead of the curve, and so what if the stock goes up 5, 7%? At least I know management's ahead of the curve. They don't even give you a chance.
Right.
You know?
But, you know, Frank, I mean, when you look at the current environment, you know, on one hand, you know, what's the one thing you need to be careful of with an animal? Well, you don't want to be with a wounded animal. They're the most dangerous, okay? I mean, many of these companies are wounded, and they're trying their best to survive. They're doing all sorts of things, from possible mergers or not, whatever. I mean, look at the AIG situation. Look at the list of the Fannie Mae, the Freddie Mac. The losses are enormous. The numbers are out of control. And the truth is that aside from the whole political side of things, now we got Pelosi, you know, in possibly a lying situation, the political side, they're going to attack her on that. It makes me pause, because when we do not look at the stock market, I mean, I can't tell you how many people are calling it a casino now. It's a casino.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the end of day movements, the kind of numbers and the kind of moves that we're seeing, either crushing a stock
That's
or taking
true.
It up. It's extraordinary.
And,
so,
no, go ahead. I'm sorry.
All I'm saying is that, you know, you need to be, in my opinion, you know, very careful. That doesn't mean, I'm not suggesting not to be bullish or bearish. It's not the point. I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking directionally. I just think you need to stay on your toes right now, because there's a lot of things happening that, to be honest, Frank, I'm very confused about. And I know that I'm not going to speak for you, but I think there's things that you're confused about. We talk
absolutely.
About it.
Absolutely, yes.
And I've been doing this a long time. And I've been talking to a lot of people. I talk to people continually. And I got to tell you, when I talk to a gentleman who is pretty high up at Standard & Poor's, and I talk to him a lot and ask him a lot of questions about what's going on with this and, you know, what's going on with earnings this way. And I got to tell you something. The last conversation I had with him was the strangest conversation, almost like he was given a script to go by, in that he wanted to push the bullish sentiment. He wanted to say how things were looking better. And I said, wait a minute, this is not what we usually do. Why are you doing this?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you going this direction? Why are you trying to push this conversation in that direction?
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that we need to be really careful to look at all different sides of the discussion, realize that we are in a recession, bear market rally or bull market, I don't really care. But the truth of the matter is, what's going to happen over the next quarter and the next quarter and the next quarter? We have a massive unemployment situation. And yes, that may be a lagging indicator, but you know what? Have you seen the retail and the casual dining restaurants of late?
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons the casual dining has done, somebody recently said it was the casual dining, is like the internet of 1999, you know, those companies. One of the reasons that they have done so well is because they can cost cut on the fly, but more importantly, think about it. The price of food, the price of materials, the price of everything came down so dramatically that it offset the lack of business.
Yeah.
But I will tell you that I'm seeing already, number one, we're seeing gas prices go up, right?
Yeah.
I'm seeing prices on the menus going up. Have you noticed that?
Yes, absolutely.
And that's a kind of a strange combination. You have to wonder, how is that, you know, how are we seeing increases in costs of items in a time when supposedly people are trying to be a little bit more cost, conscious of costs.
Yes, an interesting point. So, interesting point. And one last thing, because I have 30 seconds. 30 seconds, literally. One buy from you and one short, and the reason why I'm doing this again, because you told us to buy agriculture. You like that sector in Monsanto last time. Let's get your ideas now.
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, real quick, we still like the agricultural sector in general. You know, I think that, you know, that's going to be good. And let me just throw gold in there as well. A short idea here is this. Some of the insurance sectors, look at like Hartford to short, possibly looking at Principal or Prudential. I'll tell you why real quick. These companies recently got the TARP. They said, pooey, I don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? Their prices came up dramatically. What we think they're going to do is try to do a secondary, and that may knock down the price. So if you watch that, do a quick short on that. Look for the secondary. Once the secondary is done, kind of move out of it.
Sounds great. Listen, Andrew, thanks again for joining me. Love to have you. The listeners love you, and I will talk to you soon, bud.
Frank, you are the best, and thanks for having me as always.
All right, man. Take care.
Bye.
Okay, guys, pitching real money again. To get that offer, you can go to www.realstorypodcast.com. That's www.realstorypodcast.com. You guys know everyone who writes for us, the offer is on there. I won't tell you what the price is. If you have any problems getting onto the website or with the offer, any questions, frank.curzio@thestreet.com. I will tell you this. I mean, this offer is going to cost less than the amount of money you're going to spend on gas this weekend. So think about that. Think about the people you get to listen to, the blogs. If you want to subscribe, there it is for you. So I try to offer as many discounts as I can for the products. And I will start pitching pretty much within the next couple of weeks. It's going to be breakout stocks. Insider Insights, and we're going to have fun offering discounts for a lot of these newsletters. This way you guys get an opportunity to get in. Only available to podcast listeners. You're not going to find those offers anyplace else on our website. Let's move on. Get some data today. Starting with the VIX, it was down 2%, below 28 for a minute. Then it finished up 1% to 29. Helene Meisler on the Columnist Conversation saying how meaningless this index is. I'm going to have her on the podcast next Wednesday, guys. If you have any questions, shoot them over. Frank.Kersey@thestreet.com. Oscillator 2.5, up from the past 2 days, but not bad. Remember, it was 9, 10, 3 weeks ago. Oil, as I said earlier, pushed past 60, highest level since early November on positive data. Again, I got to break it down a little bit more in a bit. And driving season starts next weekend, so running up into that. Gold up $11. Guys, you guys see the move in gold if you're not in it. It's a 940 now. Say, well, only went up, what, a little over 1%. But gold stocks surge. Yamana Gold now at $10. Okay, recommended that one at 4 for the stock center 10, another one we can take advantage of. But wouldn't tell people to buy at 10. It's a hold, but there's a lot of money going into gold. A lot of the hedge funds are just beginning to go into gold. I will say the last time we saw that, we saw a buzz surrounding gold, it sold off. However, the move is very, very impressive. Now, you look at gold, you look at oil, and they're surging, and why they're so strong. Well, the dollar continues to sell off, so a lot of people going into gold and oil. Looking at one more indicator, the bull bear. It says that it's the fewest bears in over a year. Not good, because that's considered a contrarian indicator. Overall, no clue to make out from the data I just mentioned. Everything's mixed. Everything's crazy. Everything's all over the place. Again, getting results. People think we're going to test the lows. People think they're going to surge past 1,000 S&P. Everybody's all over the place. I will tell you this. I'm loving this pullback for stocks in Atlanta. I recommended a stock a couple days ago, and I'm starting to see a lot of stocks on my watch list come in, which is pretty cool. So I'm loving it right now in my area of the market from a large cap perspective. A lot of people are still expecting a pullback. However, there's estimates all over the place. You're seeing like bulls and bears fighting each other on CNBC. And, you know, it wasn't really like that. They always had a bull and a bear, but, you know, they were kind of, you know, on one side. Either way, the market's up, the market's down, they're all on one side. Right now, they're really on two separate sides. Like, we're testing 666 on S&P, or we're going sharply higher. You know, we're getting all these offerings out, and financials have stabilized, and everything's great. So it's interesting to see, and also confusing, I guess, to the people who watch it. But anyway, that's what this podcast is for. Try to figure it out and get some guests and get their opinions. But there are a lot of opportunities out there. At least that's what I'm seeing in Stocks Under 10. Now, two stories I wanted to talk about that I didn't go over with Andrew Horowitz, and also that I'm not going to go with Stephanie Link, who I'm going to get to that interview in about 2 seconds. First one is Palm. Seen a massive move in this stock. Downgraded to sell today, however, by Needham. It's a small investment firm. And the details were released today for the pre. It's coming out on June 6th. It's going to be released for $199. People say that was pretty good because they thought it was going to be a little bit higher. And it's going to be sold through Best Buy, Walmart, blah, 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 and everybody else. But I kind of like this downgrade. I mean, a lot has to happen in order for, you know, to support the stock price at this level. A launch has to be successful. I mean, it wasn't really successful, the iPhone or the Storm. Storm was terrible. I have the Storm. It was terrible at the beginning. It's horrible. You get the updates and then you're fine. But also, would there be a shortage late in the day? Best Buy came out and said, you know what? They might be out of stock early on. That's not good for Palm. Also, they operate through Sprint, which is, I don't know, they're terrible and still losing customers. For example, I was a Sprint person, and I also was one of the original buyers of the Palm, which I loved, and I had the iPhone, and I had the Storm. I think the original Palm was awesome, but management was just terrible, and couldn't create a new phone for, what, like 5 years. But it'll be interesting to see. Management really has to come through here. And, you know, with Sprint, I don't know if I'm willing to go back to Sprint. There might be other service providers later on, but they are launching it through Sprint. I don't know if I'd go back to Sprint just to buy the pre. I wouldn't, because that's how terrible Sprint was to me. Will Apple and RIM lower their prices for their phones? I don't know. I don't really think so. There's still demand for both of those phones, smartphones. But, you know, they may. But things to consider. You got to throw those things out there because right now it's trading at a premium valuation. I'm going to tell you this. They better sell 1 million phones in their first quarter after release, or the stock's likely going to get a hit based on this high valuation. So the reason why I bring in all those risks is everything has to go smoothly. All those points. in order to support the valuations. Very, very high. Looking long term, everything's okay with the pre. It's a good phone. Chances are Palm is going to go higher. But short term is a lot of risks, and I'd rather wait a little bit, make sure some of those are addressed before I jump in. So I do like the sell call today. Turning to oil. Push it through 60 as we head into driving season, Memorial Day weekend right around the corner. Hopefully all of you are going to do something fun. If not, relax, enjoy that three-day weekend. I know I am. But also on data. I mean, Energy Department reported, you know, they had that inventory data today. Its stockpiles for crude and nat gas dropped, and much more than analysts expected. It's a pretty big deal, right? I mean, we're seeing big builds. Also, Wall Street Journal, right? Put out a nice report today, if you guys, which you should be reading the Wall Street Journal every day. They said the IEA was mentioning that in recent months, oil companies and investors have canceled, listen to this amount, or postponed about $170 billion in investments, equivalent to roughly 2 million barrels a day in future oil supply. More supply coming off the market. So what does that mean? Let's take a look at the demand side. Well, this first on this news sent oil and gasoline prices sharply higher, along with many energy-related stocks. But demand needs to pick up sooner. We're not seeing it. The IEA is forecasting for a 3% decline in demand this year. To put that in perspective, the largest drop in 30 years to 83 million barrels a day. So, yes, we're seeing supply come down, still not seeing demand yet. So let's see. I mean, China, India, where we're going to see it from? Well, if we do see demand, probably going to see oil go a lot higher. That's what people fear. And I did talk to Phil Flynn last week and reading his newsletter, and also Steve Shork. They both think that oil is going higher, and even when it was in the mid-50s, said that they're probably going to go to 70, so both of them have been right, and have been very right on the way down as well. So just wanted to throw that at you and let you know what I'm hearing from those guys. Be interesting to see which, I don't know, I think, you know, momentum is probably going to carry it higher here, but man, these stocks, these oil stocks, it's some move. All right, let's move on. Get to my final guest. It's Stephanie Link, Director of Research for the Action Alerts Plus portfolio. She's going to break down the rest of everything that we didn't cover today, which is Andrew Horowitz and myself. But first, I start by asking her, what did you think about the Hewlett-Packard quarter?
So many people want to pounce on this thing right now. And the stock went from 25 to 36 ahead of the quarter, as a rally. And, you know, there were some pretty, I would say high expectations, but the expectations were so that they would probably do a little bit better. People were hoping that the comments from Intel and Cisco and, you know, that the technology sector had bottomed and that the environment had bottomed would translate into decent numbers for Hewlett. But, you know, enterprise spending still stinks, and it's going to stink for a while. And as long as that's the case, the company's going to have a tough time. What they were doing, they gained share in software, they gained share in services, they even gained share in PCs, but people really wanted the company to come out and have an aggressive commentary about what was happening, and clearly they were disappointed. So it's selling the news, but I don't think the fundamental story has changed at all.
That's interesting. I mean, like you said, Cisco came out pretty good, Microsoft not so good, right? Microsoft, but yeah. it just seems that.
But they made bottoming comments. You know, they just said, you know, the market's bottoming.
Intel did, yeah. And Dell. But you know, maybe we're starting to see some separation in the industry, or Home Depot too. It's amazing that those companies shouldn't have. I can't picture Lowe's doing that much better. And we got an email from somebody who brought up some good points, but I can't picture Lowe's doing that much better than Home Depot in terms of what we're seeing demand from foreclosures of people. Like, it makes no sense for me how Home Depot can't see that. I could see maybe, you know, on operations side, you know, customer service side, I see it. Okay, there's a big separation there. But if the housing market's doing good, I can't see that customers wouldn't go to both of them where. You know, maybe it's a customer service issue. But anyway, it just surprised me a little bit that we're seeing some positive comments and others are like,
Well, I think you also have some companies that are typically conservative and some are a little bit more aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that, you know, Intel or Cisco or Microsoft, when they made the comments that they made, you know, were it wasn't truthful. But it just may be there are pockets of, you know, some areas that are seeing a little bit more improvement. You know, in Home Depot's case versus Lowe's, Home Depot has more exposure in California, and clearly that market continues to be very soft. But I also think that, you know, the managements are setting keeping the expectations low because these stocks have run ahead of the of 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 the actual fundamentals. And
that's a good point, too, you bring up, that the stock has moved up considerably.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, people say, well, you know, the quarter wasn't that good, it's down 5%. It moved up considerably. And as these stocks move higher, it seems like, you know, you're going to have to, you know, put up good results, like we talk about all the time when you're on here. Less bad when a stock is up. And a lot of these stocks are up much, much more than the markets, like 40, 50%, some of them. Less bad isn't going to be good enough to push them, you know, a lot higher. So it's going to be interesting to see. Now,
Hewlett's up 44% from its low, and Home Depot's up 52%. So, you know, I mean, you've got to step back and say they've had big moves. These are good quality companies. Mm-hmm. Their balance sheets are stellar. I mean, Hewlett, $5 billion in cash. I mean, you know, this is just, you know, I understand why you wouldn't get excited about the quarter, but I also don't quite get the real dramatic sell-off. So, that you know, I think you look for an opportunity to get more bullish in them.
Okay. Now, the FOMC meetings just came out, mm-hmm. and I just had an interview, my first interview when it came out. The markets did pretty good because I think the Fed said immediately what people interpreted as, you know what, we're going to, you know, continue to keep interest rates low, do everything we can to keep them low. But the forecast, I think people are starting to get a look at the forecast now. And the forecast is basically double-digit unemployment. It's kind of like different from what, you know, Geithner was on TV today saying, you know, we're seeing the bottom, stabilization, you know, we're seeing the work that definitely the credit markets are much, you know, no denying they're much better than they were 2 months ago, 3 months ago. But, you know, but it seems like they're saying something different in an FOMC meeting. I mean, are they just being conservative? Again, they're throwing out their actual estimates where Geithner's saying the economy's doing better, we're seeing a pickup. But when they're putting the figures behind it at unemployment going to double digits nearly in 2009. Not too good, right?
Well, I think that, okay, so I think that both of them are accurate, or both of them making the comments. It's not exactly inconsistent, because I think Geithner's saying, you know, things have actually stabilized. We're not continuing to fall into the abyss, right? So we're stabilizing. It's still a fluid situation. In the FOMC meeting, you know, the debate was probably, hey, you know, are we still falling or are we stabilizing? And I don't know. I never really listen to their forecasts and determine where I want to invest or what I want to do or how I think the economy is going. I think the companies are much better at helping me forecast what is happening, or at least give me a better understanding of what is happening. And by no means are we off to a recovery, but I think we're bouncing along the bottom here. And bouncing means you're going to have some really good months and you're going to have some really crappy months.
Are we over-interpreting the data? I mean, you know, if you think about it, he really didn't say too much. they really just put more, you know, other numbers behind it. But
this market's looking to sell off. Okay, the market is looking for an excuse because we're up 35% from the lows. And the news today was not great. It wasn't great.
What do you mean by looking to sell off?
I think the market is up 35%, and I think that
Investors are
investors are looking, you know, for this to correct, and I think, you know, it wouldn't be a surprise if we saw a correction of 5 to 10% on top of what we saw last week, because you just don't go straight up, and the news is not getting better. Although, as you said, you know, I think we are bouncing along the bottom. You're going to get some good news and some bad news.
Let's talk about the Bank of America offering positive for the market, right?
Well,
I mean, it was positive early on. They were able to do the deal above 10. It seemed like they could have raised another $10 billion there if they wanted to. I mean, it really does. You know, I'm not even exaggerating. It seems like people wanted even more of it. You know, I always question, like, wow, I can't believe how many buyers are on this. And you know, good, though. You know, I guess that's got to be a positive sign for the market, though, right?
Well, what we now know is that the B of A deal, they sold shares to the largest institutions. The largest institutions out there now own chunk of B of A. So clearly the large, you know, sophisticated investor type of people are now getting in. They missed it from, you know, 2 and 3 up to 10. But I think that you're starting to see I think that the environment is still really crummy for them, but it's getting less bad. And I think that now that the balance sheet issues have been pretty well telegraphed and they're doing something about it, you could focus on some of the other businesses. Like we talked about last week, you could focus on the integration with Merrill. You could focus on the capital markets growth business. I mean, they're on every deal. And you could also make a case, if you think in a year's time that the housing market is going to bottom, that they have the largest mortgage exposure. So, you know, you can make a lot of cases to get bullish on this. And, oh, by the way, it hasn't run nearly – it's run up, but it hasn't run nearly as much, and it's not nearly as expensive as some of the other banks, which is why you're now seeing the banks sell off. I think that was a lot of supply that sapped up from this deal. A lot of supply. Plus, you know, coupled with the moves in the banks, I think it's, you know, we'll take a breather.
And it's amazing because financials were really the leader today, and then we sold off sharply. I don't know. It could have been the FOMC minutes, but financials really down sharply now. So it's interesting to see like a quick turn of events right there where it seemed like it was more of a positive. But within, you know, a couple hours notice, that's it. Next thing you know, they're down.
I think it's positive that you could get it. I think it's very, very positive that they could get the deal done.
Yes.
Very, very, very positive.
Yes.
I just think it, on top of all the deals that have come, there's just so much supply out there. Who is your incremental buyer? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you just could take a pause for a little bit.
Now, did you take a look at the deer quarter?
I did take a look at the deer quarter.
Now, here's what I saw, and I probably didn't analyze it as much as you. It seemed like it doesn't really get worse than that. I mean, the guidance was horrible. Now, don't get me wrong, because the expectations, we always talk about expectations. The expectations going in, we saw, like, you know, I mentioned this in my interview before with Andrew Horowitz, that, you know, everyone did a hack job on this company. It was just like, you know, it's going to be horrible, it's going to be horrible. And you know, it didn't matter what they report, it seemed like the stock was going to go up. It was up 2% last time I looked about an hour ago. But guidance, you know, horrible, inventory rising, the results were terrible, and they had a favorable tax rate. It seems, you know, and management was just like, look, you know, we're like, you know, we have one foot out the window right now. I mean, it really seemed that they were like, you know, telling, and I know conservative, this wasn't conservative, yeah. This is just like, whoa, things are horrible. This stock went up. Now, how could you compare this company to Caterpillar? Because Caterpillar, I would say, wasn't too bad, wasn't as bad as this, from what I heard, but are they kind of in the same boat, Caterpillar and Deere? Like, did this quarter make you nervous about Caterpillar?
No. Okay, so first and foremost, I don't think the management of Deere is very good. I really don't. Mm-hmm. And I know that's very blunt, but I really don't. I know the company very well. We used to own it, and even in the best of times, the boom times, this company couldn't deliver a clean quarter. I mean, just couldn't. It was always a problem with their finance unit, always a problem with some inventories, always a problem with some region. They never got it together 100%, you know, like they just couldn't do it. Whereas, but I will tell you, the reason the stock is up because people want to own ag, because prices are going up for materials, for all of the commodities right now.
But
they're just going
high. Potash, Monsanto going through the roof.
And Deere is a play on that as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's a play on the commodities going higher, the farmers getting richer because they're getting more prices, better prices for their commodity, and the world is going to eat more because we're getting more sophisticated. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just making it very, you know, dumbing it down, really. I mean, that's the way I look at it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think that Deere, they're just not, the quality of the company, the management, I think they have some issues. But that's why the stock is up. I don't think it has anything to do with the fact that expectations were really low, because expectations have been very low for this company for the last couple of quarters, and they haven't, they've delivered horrible, horrible numbers. But, you know, people just want to own the play on ag. So I understand that. I appreciate that. I just think there's other ways to play it. Caterpillar doesn't have, it's not as tied to the commodity cycle, mm-hmm. but it's more on the infrastructure side. And I think that, you know, they're saying a lot of great things coming out of China right now. And I think that's the better play. I just think their balance sheet is stronger. The yield is safer, knock on wood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the company really, really sandbagged the numbers, I think. And, you know, low 30s, I think it's worth a shot.
All right. Last thing here, GE. You guys kind of liking it this level, even though, you know, moved up. I mean, I could say, well, it moved up from 5, but it's actually down sharply still. But you feel more confident with GE.
You know what? Jeff Immelt said yesterday was really pretty impressive.
Take it easy. Don't get crazy.
No.
You mentioned his name. You're going to...
I'm
going
to go a little nuts.
I did a video today, and a Chinese little girl came up and threw something at me.
Oh, really?
Isn't that funny? Yeah. I think she was feeding the birds, and she just threw bread at me. But I was like, oh, that was cool. So don't throw anything at me. I already got to throw at me once today.
I will not throw anything at you.
Go ahead.
He actually had something very interesting to say. And his number two, had the guy who runs their industrial business, was very impressive yesterday. Immelt, not so much. But, you know, he had, you know, Immelt had just like his typical positive commentary and
like
the smile.
Now?
No. But the guy underneath him made some really interesting comments about the industrial side of the business, that you know, business is better and that, most importantly, Frank, they want to get back to what they do well, and that's in industrial projects. And they eventually, and the big reason that I was more positive on it, because they indicated they want to get that piece of the business back to 75% of the overall company. and finances will be 25%. And that's a really big statement because we all wanted them to say that. We've all known that for a while. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they finally have figured it out, and I just still believe that these guys on the industrial side are still the leaders in the industry. They are the creme de la creme. They have the market share. They've got the contacts. They've got the wonderful clientele. You know, it was the financials and the lack of transparency on the financial side that really spooked everybody. And, you know, the interesting thing is everybody still hates the stock. So as long as everybody still hates the stock and they're raising up their targets, yeah, I like it. I mean, so we bought some. Look, we bought it at 8. We bought it at 9. We bought it at 11. We're now buying it at 14. You know, we're averaging our position. We're averaging our costs. We're not perfect. We didn't get the bottom, but we hung on to it. We didn't sell it. And, you know, think that the story could get a higher multiple if they, in fact, deliver on what they're talking about.
Okay, 30 seconds left here. Direction of the market. We see the bull bear. I mean, the bears are at the lowest level in over a year.
I know.
You know, so that's a contrarian indicator, not good. Oscillator still coming in, though. Nice 2.5. You know, very nice. I mean, we saw it 9, what, 2-3 weeks ago? VIX is lower, although I'm going to have Helene Meiser come on next week, which is Wednesday.
That'll be
she's
great.
Going to tell me that it's meaningless, and, which is great. She's awesome, so I can't wait for that interview. But, you know, just from those indicators, or where do you think the direction of the market is heading from here on in? Because it seems like there's a lot of confusion. I'm actually leaning a little bit more bullish because I'm seeing a lot of stocks finally come in for me, and I recommended one stock, I think, 2 days ago. And it's really nice to see a pullback. It's what I really wanted. And you're seeing, you know, when the Russell's down 1%, sometimes these stocks go down 5-7% in my world.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
You know, I think that I think we're going to continue to grind higher. I just don't think we're going straight up every single day. I think, you know, on the big pullbacks, you nibble and you buy. You make your shopping list. Mm-hmm. And like we've always said, you don't have to pay up for anything. You'll get it. And I think that we are better than where we were 6 months ago. And I think we're going to be a lot better 6 months from now. And I think the market is, you know, starting to discount that, but there's still a lot more upside than to earnings over time because, you know, these companies have done what they've needed to do to get lean and put in productivity enhancements and et cetera. So I think we grind higher, but I don't think, you know, we're not going to go straight up at all. You know,
all right.
So just pick your points.
Sounds great. Thank you. I know it's been a very, very busy day for you. You've been everywhere. You're over videos, everything, and you still managed to find time for me at the podcast.
Always.
I appreciate it.
Always.
I appreciate it. I know the audience loves the comments, too. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right, guys, tomorrow's real story today, 3 reports, initial claims, leading indicators, Philadelphia Fed. All pretty important. Even if Philadelphia Fed, yes, a little important. Earnings, GameStop, SunTech Power, Giga Media, Children's Place, MF Global, Toro, American Eagle Outfitters, PacSun. Also, a lot of retailers. Foot Locker, Paulins Fragrances, Zumiez, Dressbon, Aeropostale, Buckle, Steinmont, Stage Stores. So we're going to see a lot of retailers report tomorrow, so be aware if you do have retailers in your portfolio. If you have any questions or comments for today's show, I can be reached at frank.kersey@thestreet.com. It's frank.kersey@thestreet.com. And American Idol finale tonight. It's going to be interesting. Who's going to be? It's going to be Chris or Adam. They sang pretty good. Yes, I'm into American Idol. One of those 50 million people I don't vote. But, yes, I do like American Idol. Not ashamed to admit it. Anyway, that's it for me, guys. Have a great night, and I'll see you tomorrow. Take care.
The views expressed on The Real Story by Frank Curzio and his guests are theirs alone and do not represent those of TheStreet.com Incorporated. In keeping with TheStreet.com's editorial policy, Curzio is not allowed to own or short individual stocks or invest in hedge funds, though he can invest in mutual funds and ETFs. Email Frank at frank.curzio@thestreet.com. That's frank.curzio, C-U-R-Z-I-O, @thestreet.com.
At Continental Airlines, we're proud to fly the newest jet fleet among global airlines based in the U.S. State-of-the-art, fuel-efficient planes that beg the question, don't you love that new plane smell? For reservations, go to Continental.com. Continental Airlines. Work hard, fly right.
AT&T works in more places. Whether you're texting directions to a friend, checking email on the go, or calling home from abroad, AT&T is delivering wireless for the way you live, on the go. AT&T is America's wireless leader, with more customers than any other carrier. So live wireless and stay connected to your family, your friends, your world, with wireless from the new AT&T. Your world, delivered.